famous for her tiled fabric technique of colors sweeping across the background and her continual passion for color and capturing light in landscapes, abstract, and architectural work, this Aussie quilter has a list of accolades that has brought her to more than 20 countries to teach, speak, and show her work in special exhibits. Today, I'll have a chat with Gloria Laufman. Hello and welcome to the Quilter on Fire podcast, where I explore the stories, the connections, and the joy of guests in the quilting world. I'm your host, Brandi Maslowski, the Quilter on Fire, and I can't wait to share this week's episode with you. So here we go. My guest today is Gloria Laufman. This is one of those episodes where I can't imagine how I'll catch all of the best bits to share with you because her list of achievements spans over 30 years. If you were to do a study on light, color, photography, and capturing all of that in your art quilts, Gloria's website would be the only place you need to go. She is known worldwide as the vibrant landscape quilter. If you've seen a special exhibit of her work up close, or even poured through the galleries on her website, it will steer your understanding of color and value in a brand new direction. So let's explore the story of Gloria Laufman. Gloria, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brandi. Lovely to be with you.
Well, I'm so happy to have you on the show. And everyone who's listening right now knows that I love to start right back at the beginning. So let's take a look a few decades back at where you got started. When do you first remember putting stitch to fabric?
Well, looking back, you would be very surprised at what I do today. I was the sort of kid that played every sport you could play. I lived on a farm, so I was always running around, very physical. And the thought of actually stitching would have been very foreign, perhaps a nightmare to me. I can remember when I was in year seven, first year at high school, we had to do embroidery by hand. And I would run around at recess and lunchtime and then come into class and try and do those little stitches, embroidery stitches. We did two samples for the year and I lost one and I failed needlework in year seven.
Oh, no.
So not a very good start. I didn't do anything to do with stitching until later on when we were married. So not surprisingly, I went on to train as a teacher of physical education and mathematics. And after we were married and after the birth of our second daughter, my husband, out of the blue, bought me a Bernina sewing machine for Christmas. Now, he was excited, a lot more excited than I was. I didn't really know what to do with it. But eventually we had three daughters and I started making their clothes. And I found that I really enjoyed stitching on a sewing machine. And to this day, I still don't stitch by hand, except the binding. So he likes to tell people it was his biggest mistake buying that sewing machine, but it was the start of something. So then I went back to university and trained to be a special needs teacher. And after moving to the country, a country town in 86, we'd only been there a short time and I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I was still in my 30s, very fit, still played every sport you could play. So it was quite a shock. And I had surgery, chemotherapy. And towards the end of that time, a friend invited me to a quilting class. So I joined the local patchwork group and really I just went for the fun and the fellowship. And I did my first workshop, which was a traditional quilt. The funny thing was I really enjoyed the rotary cutting and the stitching of my machine, and I put that queen-size quilt together, and then I started hand quilting, and I'm ashamed to tell you that quilt was never finished. So that was my beginning of quilting.
So that was your very first quilt. Can you tell us, were there certain people in your early quilting life that had a creative impact on you early on?
Well, living in a small country town, there were only about 3,000 people there, and belonging to the patchwork group, we really didn't know any rules and we used to make it up and experiment. We did have visiting teachers come occasionally to teach classes, Australian quilting teachers that would come through maybe for a weekend, but virtually we made it up ourselves. A few of us travelled to different locations for quilting workshops, but we were about 3 hours from Melbourne. Our nearest patchwork shop was about 3 hours away. So really it was just, you know, the blind leading the blind. We just made it up as we went along. And for most of us, the brighter, the better.
Yeah.
So after making quite a few traditional quilts, I started to get a bit frustrated because I knew nothing about colour or design. The last time I did art was in year 10 at school, and that was sort of a bit of a failure as well. And so I enrolled in a diploma of art about 1994, and I did that by correspondence. And it was the end of that time that I started making my big landscape quilts. So that was sort of the initial journey that I went on. I was still teaching at school, so I didn't have much time to quilt. And so for about the next 5 or 6 years, I just tried to make one big quilt a year.
Yeah. And so you had the career as a special needs teacher. You were launching into your quilting on the side. How did your love for quilting blossom from there? I mean, at some point, you kind of had to hit a point where, yeah, this is what I'm going to do.
I think I started entering my quilts in exhibitions, both in Australia and overseas in that time. And I won quite a few quite major awards during that time. And about 1999, I was invited to teach quilting classes. Now, I was really nervous about doing that because, okay, I could teach maths, I could teach phys ed, I could teach literacy and numeracy, but I was quite nervous about doing something that in a way is more creative and more out there. So I did receive a lot of invitations to teach, and busy being, you know, I was still busy at school. So at the end of 2001, we talked to our accountant about the possibility of me leaving school to teach quilt making. And he looked at me over his glasses and said, you know, why would you give up this $50,000 a year job for craft? And I sort of came out feeling sort of quite subdued and down about the whole thing. But I think after having the breast cancer, that really changed the way Tony and I thought about things. And so we decided to give it a go. Yeah. So I just took leave of absence from school for 1 year. So I could still go back the following year. And I taught flat out that year and decided that I just loved it. And at the end of that year, I resigned from school. And so that's like 23 years ago. And I've been teaching ever since. So I love teaching, and I'm so lucky now and fortunate to be able to work with people in this sort of creative environment.
Yeah, and I can't wait to dive into all of your workshops and everything you love to teach. But I want to take a moment now to ask you, where are you in the world and who do you surround yourself with every day?
So we live on the Bellarine Peninsula, which is about an hour south of Melbourne on Port Phillip Bay. So we're on the east coast of Australia, but right down the bottom of the main part of Australia. We've still got Tasmania a little bit further south. We've been here for about 15 years and we built our house. We look across the bay, so we have a beautiful view. And when we built the house, I mentioned or contemplated that perhaps I could teach from home and not travel so much. So when the architect was drawing up the plans, I kept asking him to make my studio bigger, push the walls out so I could run classes. And so I think it was a turning point for me as well that I have a wonderful big studio. I haven't taught any classes from home. I've filled it all up with my own sort of resources. I have a lovely area for dyeing. I have a dedicated washing machine downstairs, a lovely polished concrete floor. So, you know, paint and things, it's not an issue. So that was also a turning point for me that I've now got this amazing space. As far as people, my husband, Tony, was a school teacher, physics and maths. He was also an assistant principal. He's retired now, but a very keen photographer. And we have three daughters who are all professional women who are very supportive of me and what I do. And then we have nine grandchildren. And it's really quite timely doing this podcast today because just this last weekend, my husband celebrated his 80th birthday party, his 80th birthday, and we had a big party. And each of our nine grandchildren spoke at his birthday party, which was quite hilarious. Lots of funny stories, but it was also very heartfelt. So family are really important to us. So yeah, I feel very blessed with the supportive community around me.
Yeah, that is so wonderful. And, you know, so when we hear the name Gloria Loffman in the quilting world, everyone knows who you are and everyone just sort of yearns for the day that you're going to be in their area within travel distance so that they can take one of your courses. But are your kids and grandkids aware of the impact you're having in the quilting world?
Probably not.
Do they know you're famous?
I'm just grand to them. You know, I've had exhibitions in Australia and overseas. One of our daughters lived in the Netherlands for quite a few years and then in Switzerland. So I did a lot of teaching in Europe during that time and she would come to the exhibition. So, you know, I guess they know what I do. They know that I, you know, have exhibitions and awards, but you know, it's just part of our family life. I mentioned I've never had a class in my studio, but I do have grandchildren working regularly in here, painting and stitching on the machine. Our eldest granddaughter has actually won some awards for her quilts, and she's won a Bernina sewing machine. Oh, she's wow. Now 21 and she uses that machine to make clothes. So that's pretty nice. Even the boys have been down here sewing, making all sorts of things on the sewing machine. So the boys quite like actually using the machines rather than anything creative. Our boys do anyway. So no, I think, you know, we all contribute in the family and we all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and we look out for each other. Yeah.
Oh, so wonderful. Now, my next question, I ask every single guest I have on the podcast, but somehow it doesn't quite seem adequate. So the question is, how did you grow and change with your quilting style over time? But it makes me want to just dive into the conversation about quilts. So let's talk about the quilts. And I think as we talk about some of the, you know, quilts over the first 10 years, for instance, we'll get an idea of how your style grew and changed over time. So which quilts were the most memorable in those first few years?
I guess the most memorable was the first big landscape quilt that I made. And I made that quilt in about 1996. Now I just finished the Diploma of Art. And one of the exercises I did during that course was to design a wall hanging. So while I was doing that course, I had no time to sew because I was still at school and I did that, sort of worked on my assignments at nighttime weekends. But when I finished that, I went on to make that first big landscape quilt called Bingle Bay. And it was a real experiment. When I look at it now, there's lots of things wrong with it as far as, you know, perspective. Living in Kerrang, there was no shop to go and get fabric, so I painted fabric and there's a big join in the middle of the sky, all sorts of things like that. But that was the first quilt that I actually exhibit in our state exhibition. It came third in the pictorial section and it won viewer's choice. And that was like such a shock. I can remember feeling quite ill about sending a quilt off to be in the public arena for the first time and then seeing it hanging with all these other incredible quilts in our state exhibition. So that was wonderful for me. It gave me a boost. And then I decided that I would enter that quilt in the Yokohama International Quilt Competition, which is held every year in Japan. I only had to send off a couple of slides. So I didn't hear anything for a few months. And then I had a phone call to say, congratulations, your quilt has been accepted. Can you have it in Tokyo on Friday? And, you know, even when from our little country town, just getting it to Melbourne on Friday would have been an achievement. But I sent it off and a few weeks later, I got another email to say, congratulations, you have won second grand prize.
Oh,
now,
wow.
I was so excited and I was running around the house, you know, yelling and laughing. And so I wrote to them and said, well, what does that mean? And they said there were 1,300 quilts entered and your quilt has won second prize. So it was just incredible. I talked to my husband about perhaps we could go to Japan and I could receive this award in person. Yeah. So this was in 1997. We'd only been to New Zealand before. We didn't even have passports. So the pair of us went to Japan, which is not the easiest country to visit on your first overseas trip, but we had a wonderful time. And it was right at the end of our time there that we were at the exhibition for the award ceremony. Now, first prize was the most beautiful cream quilt with the very palest of green applique, hand appliqued, hand quilted, absolutely beautiful. And next to it was my bold, brash landscape quilt, all made on the sewing machine. So it was such a contrast. And when they had the award ceremony, the very gracious Japanese woman accepted her prize and then it was up to me. So, you know, I went up on stage to receive the award, which was an envelope of cash. And then I sat down and at the end of the ceremony, we went to thank the organisers and they said to us, these are the rest of your prizes. And there was a whole table covered with beautifully wrapped boxes. Now, we had like rucksacks, you know, and I had bought fabric and it was stuffed into every pocket in the rucksack. So it was like, how do we get this home? And I was prepared to sacrifice all my clothes, all Tony's clothes, but the organisers gave us a suitcase and then packed all the boxes in, out to the train station, out to the airport, coming home. Did you pack your own suitcase? This was in 1997, so we just said yes. And we didn't open those boxes till we got home. And there were antique fabrics, beautiful scissors, pewter thimbles, lots of quilting books in Japanese. It was, you know, silk scarves. It was beautiful. And then it was like, was that a fluke? Can you do this again? So then probably for, as I said, about the next 5 or 6 years, I made one big quilt a year and I entered it in Australia in our state exhibition and in New South Wales. And then I started entering these large landscape quilts in exhibitions in Australia and then also in Europe at the Europe Quilt Competition and in the US at Houston, and I did manage to win quite a few major awards.
Oh, that is so wonderful. So I just want to take a moment here to tell everyone where they can go if they're listening right now and they want to see these visuals, right? So you can go to GloriaLoffman.com. Of course, there's a beautiful gallery there. And this quilt, Bingo Bay, is her first big landscape. And the colors in this quilt are dark and rich, almost mysterious even. It's like you're crouched looking out at the bay, right? It's just beautiful. So go on over to the website. And if you're not sure how to spell Gloria Loughman, everyone knows how to spell Gloria, but Loughman is L-O-U-G-H-M-A-N. So you want to go check that out. So this quilt we're talking about is under landscape quilts. So let's go on to talk about another few quilts that you have. You mentioned that one won a big award in the USA. Which one was that?
Tidal Images won an award at Houston. And then another quilt, probably the one I'm most well known for in Australia, is Kimberly Mystique, that won a judge's award at Houston as well. And that's probably the most major work that I have done. It's also on my website, of course, but it's a quilt featuring the baobab trees over in the Kimberley area of Australia. And at that time, I was experimenting with pattern. And so the surface of those beautiful big baobab trees gave me a lovely surface to experiment and to add lots of pattern. So if you actually go to the Kimberley and you see those trees, they're usually sort of a grey, murky colour, yeah. Fabulous shapes. But I just had so much fun playing with the surface on those quilts.
Yeah, so this one's like an iconic Australian landscape, again, with gorgeous, rich colors. But the thing that really stands out in this quilt is that luminous golden sky. You know, it looks like an iconic outback quilt. Those trees are just make you think of the colors of Australia. So this one is in the outback quilts under the gallery on the website. But let's talk about one more landscape. You mentioned Tidal Images. So this was the first quilt that was purchased by a quilt museum, right?
Yes, that's right. So we do have the Australian Quilt Museum up and running now, and that quilt was their first purchase. So they approached me about purchasing that quilt. I was very happy for them to do that because that quilt is huge and it's so big and heavy that it would almost fill a suitcase by itself. So it didn't get to travel that much. I made that quilt in, I think, 1998, 99, somewhere around about that time. And it is large. And also the backing fabric that I put on the back, considering at the time I lived in a small country town and it was hard to actually purchase fabric, I used a furnishing fabric on the back, which makes the quilt even bigger and heavier. And so that one was their first purchase. And I'm so happy that they bought that because now it can be shared by many. They also travel the quilts around Australia. So it's wonderful that the Tidal Images quilt was purchased by the Australian Quilt Museum.
Yeah. And so if you're listening now and you're looking for this one again, it's under landscape quilts. But I just want to talk about it for a minute because this one looks like an incredible combination of techniques, from intricate piecing in the sky to, I mean, let's just talk through it. Like, parts of this quilt look like a mosaic tile and other, it even looks like it's painted. So can you give us an idea of how you put this quilt together?
So the Tidal Images quilt was a big project for me. At the time, I was still teaching at school. And during those years, I tried to make one big quilt a year. So I drew it out with all the different parts and then I'd work on each section separately and eventually I had to put it together. So I was very aware of repeating colours, repeating shapes to make sure that, you know, there was still harmony when I had so many different images to put together. So there's different times of the day. There's the tide that comes in and out because the mangroves, which is, you know, the basis for this quilt, they breathe when the tide is out, but they survive when the tide comes in. So there were lots of different things I wanted to include there. And I worked on it for about 12 months. So it was quite a big project. Eventually, I'd made all the separate sections and I had to put them together and then quilt it on my trusty Bernina 870 sewing machine, my basic sewing machine that I had in those days. So it was a huge thing. And then I really struggled to find the backing fabric. So it has a very heavy furnishing fabric on the back, so that it weighs a ton. And I can remember trying to, you know, drag it through my sewing machine when I was quilting it. But I entered it in an Australia-wide competition in I think it was about 97, 98, and it won that Rhythm of Life was the title of the exhibition, the theme, and it won first prize. So it was very exciting. But it is a huge quilt. Some areas are colour washed in that there's areas of squares that are stitched together. Other areas are appliqued, and I had to put it together in order. There's a lot of machine embroidery on that quilt, and then eventually those big trees over the top. That was the last section to sew on. So it was really probably the most challenging quilt I have ever made, but it was very important for me to take the colours through to the different areas so that I had some harmony there. And also to repeat those techniques in different areas. So even though it's different images, there's a lot of repetition both in colour and in the techniques. And I've since gone on from then to make more quilts where I've put multiple images together, and I really enjoy doing that. And I'm sure there'll be more quilts in the future that I will incorporate that, the multiple images, making it work.
Yeah, it's just incredible. I really recommend that you're listening right now, you go and check this out on the website. There's one more thing you touched on a little earlier about Kimberly Mystique. You said that it won a prestigious award. So let's talk about that.
So that did win a Judge's Choice Award at Houston, but it did win our Best in Australia Award in 2004. So a long time ago now. And it is probably, as I said, the quilt I'm most well known for in Australia. So each state has their Best of State award. And then once a year, all of those quilts are judged. And yes, so it won the Best of Australia award right back in 2004. So, and I think that was sort of the last quilt I entered in any exhibitions competitions for quite some time. Then the next sort of 10 years or so, I was so busy teaching, making quilts for class samples. I didn't start entering competitions again until COVID times when I was home again. And so more recently, I've been busy making quilts and entering them in some of our Australian competitions, so which is interesting.
Yeah. So when did you start your series of architecture quilts?
That was about 2014. And I think what happened with that is eldest daughter, who was a chemical engineer, went back to university with three young children and studied architecture. Now, that was sort of, you know, around 2009, 2010. And my involvement was child minding and also sometimes helping her with the models. So, you know, I would help her with some of the landscaping, the gardens in her models, or creating some of the, helping her create the actual physical buildings that architects have to do, the models that they make. And I really enjoyed it. And I decided that I would make some quilts, or to start off, just one quilt based on a building. And I really enjoyed that. And I've made quite a series now of quilts based on buildings. And I've even got a book that I have written called Fabulous Facades, which is all about making quilts based on buildings. So mainly I've chosen iconic Australian buildings to make in fabric. Usually I change the colour schemes, sort of play around with the backgrounds, make the backgrounds fairly simple to highlight the buildings. And so I made a lot of quilts based on buildings over about 5 or 6 years. And then I went back to basically landscape until the last 12 months. And in the last 12 months, I have made another building quilt. It's not out there yet. I've entered it in our Australian quilt competition, and I really enjoyed that return to architecture.
Yeah, well, fun. And well, so, and of course, again, I'm going to say go over to the gallery, because there is a Sydney Opera House, there's a Butterfly House, there's a Modern House. You know, there's some really cool architectural quilts there. So design is something I talk about with every quilter and pattern designer and everything that I have on the podcast. When you see something in the world, whether it's landscapes or Australia or architecture, when you see something in the world that sparks an idea, how do you capture that? Are you pencil to paper or do you go digital right away?
Usually I would be taking photographs. So I'm not very good at drawing. That's never been a strength of mine. So usually I'm taking lots and lots of photos. And most of my quilts, they're not actually a reproduction of one photograph. Usually I'm taking elements from the different photos that I take and then rearranging them into a design. When I did that diploma of art, I learned a lot about design and colour, and I tried to make things my own. So it's not it's very unusual for me to actually make something that's exactly like the original image. Usually I'm playing around with the elements and then thinking about what's important with repetition. You know, where do I put the horizon line? You know, sometimes my photos will have the horizon line right in the middle. So I'm thinking, do I want to feature the sky? So yes, move the horizon line down. And a lot of my work actually features the sky. I like playing with the sky. I like tiling the sky or curving the sky, making it more abstract. And then usually the foreground elements are fairly simple. But I do enjoy playing with a whole series of images and then coming up with a design.
Yeah, I remember actually probably 7 or 8 years ago being in a small little fiber art group, and you know, we'd go around and talk about what everyone's working on right now, and someone brought this new technique she was trying, and she's like, I can't remember the name of this quilter, but she's so amazing, and everyone was like, that is Gloria Loffman. And so she was trying the tiled background effect, and she had your book and everything. So you are well known for your color, your use of color, your use of value. It's astonishing, actually. It really is. When I'm looking at title images, for instance, you can see the gorgeous mauves and purples, not only in the sky and the sunset, like the different times of day, but also in the roots. You tie it all in everywhere, right? So where do you pull your color inspiration from? Is it something you see in the world, or is it all in your imagination?
So that's a really interesting question. When I first started making the big landscape quilts, so probably the first 3-4 landscape quilts that I made, so we're talking about the late 1990s, I often used an image. It might have been a greeting card, it might have been a painting, it might have been a poster that I really loved the colour scheme. So I can remember for my title images quilt, I had a painting. It was in an art magazine of a hillside in Italy, and I loved the colours. So I very carefully made like a paint chart of the colours that were included in that painting. And of course, my work was nothing like the Italian hillside. It was title images. But I used that like a colour chart. So first of all, it limited the colours that I used, and I also knew that I loved the combination. And I did that for quite a few of my early big quilts. Since then, I have learned so much more about colour. I've studied a lot about colour in the course that I did in the Diploma of Art, but also I read other people's books about colour. And I think also I've discovered that perhaps I do have some intuition about colour, that I know what combinations I like to put together.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I do in class is that I challenge people to not make their quilts in the original colours, And for most of my classes, I have like a class set of a small design. So they're little quilts and they're made up, the same design made up in different color schemes. And, you know, there's sort of an analogous color scheme and a complementary one and a split complementary and a triad and a black and white one. And when I talk about color, I obviously show these quilts and challenge people to perhaps not use the realistic colors. And I think working with color is the most appealing part of quilt making for me. I'm always excited before I start about choosing a color scheme, be it a complementary one. And often these days I work with that triad color scheme because it's a little bit more edgy, a little bit more sort of not predictable. So color is something, it's probably the most important thing to me. The big decision I have to make when I'm starting a new project is what color scheme I'm going to use.
Yeah. So what do you think it is with your designs that really resonates with the viewer?
I think it can be the colors, but also I like to use lots and lots of fabric and put lots of small pieces of fabric together. Even that first quilt we talked about, Bingle Bay, I color washed the background, as we called it then. And it's far from perfect, but having that sort of range of colors and some different textures thrown in amongst the colors, that has always appealed to me. And now in my work, I'm not stitching squares or diamonds together on point. Mainly now I'm cutting lots of small pieces like the tiles and then fusing them on so I can get smaller and smaller but have sort of amalgamate lots of colours, subtle colour changes and also just textures there. And I think that's the thing that allows me to get light into my work, is that I'm working with small pieces, gradually changing the colours, changing the values, and being conscious of where the light is in my work, what I'm trying to do with that light source, the impact it's having. And my pieces have got smaller and smaller. With the tiles, I would cut them all out symmetrically and arrange them all with a little gap with that little bit of background fabric coming through. Now my tiles are all different sizes and they all overlap like a collage, and I'm having a lot of fun with that at the moment, and that's where I am in my own work, is still tiling, I guess, in effect, but no gaps, all different sizes, overlapping, lots of different fabrics, lots of different textures.
Yeah, and you were absolutely famous for that tiling technique. And we're going to talk about that when we get into some of your books. But you write these words on your website, and the conversation we're having leads right into this. Underlying all my work is a passion for color and the ongoing challenge to capture light in my work. This makes me think of the brilliant background and in the trees, and some of your pieces, the trees have these gorgeous shadows in the right spots. So why do you write that on your website? Why is that really the light, the thing that you're going for most?
To me, that's the most powerful thing that you can get into your work. And when I go to galleries and look at artists' work, it can be quite a simple design, but it's the way that artists use light, to me, is the most powerful element that you can get in your work. And so for me, I'm always striving to do it, and there's always room for improvement. So I'm always thinking about which direction the light's coming from, and then trying. It's such a powerful element, just trying to get it in there. And I think that's why I cut the pieces so small these days, is that it allows me to, you know, change the background. So I have areas of light, I have that focus, and then what happens when that light hits a tree or hits a building. So I'm always striving. I'm not there yet, but that's always the challenge to me, is to think about where the light's coming from.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so good. And if you're listening right now and you're just thinking, I could take an hour and do a study on color and value and light in quilting, just go to the website, GloriaLoffman.com. There are galleries for landscape quilts, abstract quilts, outback quilts, overseas quilts, and architecture quilts. So we haven't touched on the overseas quilts yet. So are those from some of your travels?
Yes, so we've been so fortunate. And when I say we, my husband travels with me probably about 95% of the time. And he's a very keen photographer, and that's his passion. So we're a good team, really. We enjoy traveling together. And so I've made quilts of different places that we've been. Although I specialize, I guess, in sort of Australian landscapes, I've got quite a few quilts that I've made based on images from Scotland, Canada, South Korea, all different places that we've traveled to. And just recently, my husband and I worked together on a book, and we arranged it in countries. And it was my response to his images, my response in fabric and in stitching. And I have actually made quite a lot of quilts based on overseas destinations or locations. So that's been a joy to me. And, you know, you're working on it and then you're thinking about when you were there and what fun you had. So we've been very fortunate to have traveled so widely. And then, you know, I relive the holiday or the teaching experience while I'm working on the quilt.
Yeah. And how much fun is it to be with your loved one everywhere you go? And when you're collaborating on something like that book project, do you sit down and get to work and plan out what you're going to do? Or do you go and travel and just take the photos and be inspired as you go?
So what happened with the book was that it was towards the end of COVID, and we were on a camping trip. I think it was the first time we were actually able to sort of leave our state. And we travelled right up to the top of Australia, to the Northern Territory, to Kakadu National Park and Arnhem Land. And once again, my husband took lots of photos. I took lots of photos. And then it took us 6 days driving to get home, driving every day. Wow. So I had 6 days to work on him to talk about that perhaps we could do a collaboration of his photography and my quilts. So he was sort of a captive audience, really. But by the time we got home, I'd talked him into it. And it was a wonderful experience to work on that together. I really hadn't started teaching again because of COVID. So we did have time. And when we did that, I had sort of galleries of his images to inspire me. So I did make new quilts for that book based on some of the places that we'd been to. But then I had a whole lot of quilts made based on Scotland. So he had to go searching for his albums of photos from Scotland. So it was a fun time working on that together. So my studio is downstairs, and he's on the next level, so in his area working. So we spent months with me downstairs working, and then we'd get together for some of the day and we'd see where we were at. We agreed on just about everything. His background is physics, math, science, so he likes things to be very ordered. And I was sort of a bit more, I felt on the creative side, a bit more sort of free with my ideas. But it was a wonderful experience. I think in the end, I got my way most of the time. But we had some really fascinating conversations as to how we would do the setting out. He taught himself how to use the program for doing all the editing. And it was a fabulous project to work on together. We loved it and we're so thrilled with the result. It's the first time we've self-published, so it was a big learning curve. But the book has been very warmly received, yes.
Yeah, so if people are thinking, I want to buy that book or I want to go check it out, where can they find it?
Virtually, we have the books because we self-published. You know, when I'm traveling, I take books with me. But I've had a lot of people from Canada, the US, England, wherever, have ordered the book. It's really lovely. It's a heavy book because it's over 200 pages and beautiful paper that we used. But often people will get together. A few people will get together, and then the postage is quite reasonable. If we're sending like three books somewhere, it's quite reasonable. So groups have tended to do that. And then I do bring them to class when I'm traveling as well. Yes.
Okay. So that one is available at GloriaLoffman.com in the shop. And it's the very first book on the top that says New Arrival, Vibrant Landscapes. Okay. Gloria, we must talk about the fabric. So much of what we see in your quilts in the gallery, we've never seen before. So tell us about your fabric. Where is it from?
So some of the fabric that I use is hand painted. So I'm just using a nice sort of high thread count white cotton fabric that I paint. And then other fabric I've dyed. So I've been dyeing fabric for, wow, many, many years, 25 years or more. So I do dye a lot of fabric, and I actually take the hand dyed fabric to classes with me so students can purchase it there. But in more recent times, where I've been playing more with pattern as well, I'm overpainting a lot of commercial fabrics. So I'm always on the lookout for sort of a light background fabric that has interesting texture, commercial fabrics. So I've, most of my recent work, that has been a feature. And it just, by overpainting, you can extend your range of colours incredibly. So, yes, that's been a lot of fun. And it's interesting. It is a journey and you change as you go along. I used to use a lot more batiks than I use now. Now I tend to overpaint other commercial fabrics because I like the pattern. And by the time you overpaint them, they're not going to fray anyway because you've clogged up all the fibres with paint. So in more recent times, that's what I tend to do.
Okay. And I, you know, sometimes I try to imagine what a listener would be thinking or wanting to ask, what kind of paint do you use?
Okay. So the paint that I use is an Australian fabric paint called High Strike. But as I travel around the world, I just purchase wherever I'm going, I will purchase what's available. So I've just done a big order from ProChem in the US for my upcoming classes at Empty Spools in California. But I'm always looking for a transparent fabric paint, and then I can see the pattern coming through, or I can apply different layers of colour and I see them coming through from underneath. Occasionally I'll need some opaque paint, and then I'll, you know, if I want to overpaint a light colour on a dark fabric because I want some snow or something like that, not that we have much snow in Australia. That's usually when I'm in Canada, I'm looking for snow. But basically, I'm looking for a transparent fabric paint, and they still leave the fabric quite soft. So they don't change the hand of the fabric too much so that it is quite lovely to use. And then, of course, as I mentioned, I am overpainting commercial fabric. So once again, transparent fabric paint works really well. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so over the years, you've had a collaboration with Bernina. So tell us how that came about, and it lasted quite some time, didn't it?
Yes, it was a wonderful collaboration. It lasted for probably 20 years. So I did get that Bernina sewing machine in 1974 that I used right through until the late 90s, where I did actually win. I think I might have won in my time at least four Bernina sewing machines. Wow. So that's been wonderful as well. But about 2000, 2001, Bernina approached me about having a collaboration with them, and they lent me a Bernina sewing machine that I took around to classes. It worked really well for me, and it worked well for Bernina, because when people were struggling in class with their sewing machine, I'd just, you know, say, hey, use this one. It belongs to Bernina. And I'd go, oh, wow, this is working so well. And then, you know, the local Bernina store would get like six orders for Bernina sewing machines. So it was a wonderful collaboration for me. But, of course, it's a two-sided thing. So Bernina want you to make samples for them. I have exhibited at some of the quilt shows my work on the Bernina stands. It's been a fabulous collaboration with them. But maybe about 3 years ago, with time being so limited, I chose to actually buy my own sewing machine. And so I still have a wonderful relationship with Benina. But, and I still, obviously, it's such a wonderful product that I'm happy to get it out there, but I don't have to make any projects for them anymore. And you know, I'm good with that now.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, I want to get into some of your travels. So what are some of the favorite quilting events that you've attended over the years?
So there are quite a few that are overseas. I do teach at Empty Spools in California, the five-day classes there. I've been doing that for about 15, 16, 17 years, and I've met some wonderful people there, and I've made some very close friends who come back year after year to Empty Spools. I also teach for Madeline Island School of the Arts in the US. And I think it's teaching the five-day classes that are the highlight for me.
Yeah.
In the earlier days, I would, you know, I'd go to a guild and I'd give a talk and maybe teach the next day for them. But as I'm getting older, I enjoy the, you know, 4 day, 5 day classes where I really get to know people. Another really wonderful place that we enjoy visiting is Scotland. I've probably been to Scotland about 8 or 9 times, and we always try and incorporate a little bit of a holiday there as well, traveling around. We've made some wonderful friends in Scotland. South Korea, that was a fabulous highlight for both of us, traveling to South Korea to teach classes for Benina. Such a different country. The students there were all teachers for Benina, but they were all younger. So that was really refreshing because I'm like the grandma of the group now. And they laughed. I had to have someone translating, and we had a lot of fun. There was a lot of laughter and chatter in class. So that was pretty special. And then in Australia, my very most favourite place to teach is at Uluru, Ayers Rock, in the centre of Australia. There's a quilting retreat held there every second year, and I've been fortunate to teach at all of those retreats. And there's another one, August next year. We take everything in because there's no quilt shop. There's one little supermarket, but you have the amazing Ayers Rock and then the Olgas nearby. They're 4 day classes with one teacher. There's usually about 4 or 5 teachers, and it's held in the hotel, the Sales Hotel. And we go out into the desert. We have dinner under the stars at night. We go to the Field of Lights, where they have 300,000 lights lit up in the fields at nighttime near the base of Ayers Rock. Some wonderful excursions combined with some quilting classes. So that is a very special retreat for me to teach at that. So August 2025 is the next one. So I've made my sample already.
Oh, it sounds like a dream retreat for sure.
Yes.
Okay, so let's name those two places in the US, Empty Spools, and what was the other one?
Madeline Island School of the Arts. So this year I'm teaching in New Mexico at Santa Fe for them, and also at Maine over on the East Coast. And they're both 5 day classes. So having a 5 day class with participants is absolutely fabulous. We get to do a little project on day one, a color exercise, a small project that I give to everybody. And then people work on their own designs for the other 4 days. So you get to know people well. People have time to make mistakes and pick themselves up and keep going. And, you know, in a 5 day class, there are highs and lows, of course, but it's fabulous having that time with people. So they're very special events for me.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like so much fun. Like a dream bucket list retreat. Eat any of those things. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about a few of your books. You've already mentioned the fun collaboration you did with your husband, Tony, with your latest book, but let's talk about a few of the other ones. So let's start with Luminous Landscapes. How did that book come about?
So in the early 2000s, I was making my landscape quilts and teaching classes. And I decided to be really brave and perhaps approach a publishing company about doing a book. So I knew nothing about any of that. So I approached C&T and they came back very positive. And so that was my first experience of writing a book. Now, with my special needs kids, I've done a lot of instructional writing with them. So I actually found that part not too bad. But then we had to find a photographer because C&T are based in the US and here we are in Australia. So usually if you are writing a book for C&T, you would, and working on a project, you would start and make the first step. Then you would stop and go back and start again and do two steps and then stop, go back, do three steps. But because I had to send stuff from Australia, that really wasn't very practical. So we approached C&T and we asked them whether my husband Tony could do the photography. So they had to check him out. So we were over in the US for some classes. So we went to C&T and they looked at some of his work and spent some time with him and decided, yes, he was quite capable of doing the photography. So that's how we worked. So the first one book was Luminous Landscapes, which was published in 2007, and that opened many, many doors for us. I can still remember, we lived in the small country town then, I can still remember going to the post office and the first copy of the book was there and opening it up in the post office and bursting into tears. It was so amazing to think that we had done this and here was this book. And it proved to be a very popular book and it opened a lot of doors for us as far as invitations to teach. So, yeah, I do enjoy the process of writing and doing the books. And we then went on to do the second book, which the book is titled Quilted Symphony. And I wrote that book after making that big baobab tree quilt. People were interested in how I did the patterns in the trees. Yeah. And kept asking questions about it. And C&T very kindly decided to publish that book as well. So that book is based mainly on pattern and playing with pattern and even pattern in the landscape. So that was sort of book number two. So the next book was Radiant Landscapes, and that was published in 2013. And that book has been very, very popular. I think it's just come off their list. So it's lasted a long time on their list, but you can still get a copy that they will print for you. So it still is available. But that's proved to be very, very popular.
I want to talk about that one a little bit more because when you put this book out into the world, what was the reaction? Like, how did you kind of know, yeah, okay, this one really is a hit?
I guess initially it was because of how many were sold. But what I see is that technique used over and over and over, and it's still very popular today. So I started teaching that class and experimenting with that technique around about 2010. And in fact, when I was writing the Quilted Symphony book, the one about pattern, that's when I started tiling, and I made some samples for that book, and I looked at one of them and I thought, wow, that would make a great sky. And then I couldn't wait to be finished and start experimenting with the tiling. And I've used it by skies and forest backgrounds. And I still really love that technique today. And I still teach that class today. So I've been teaching that particular class for about 15 years. So it's just, it allows you to play with the light. That's what it's about. Yeah. And then what I'm doing in my own work today is built on from that, sort of, you know, with the irregular shapes now and overlapping.
Yeah, so much fun. Okay, let's talk about Fabulous Facades.
So it's really interesting how that came about. Our eldest daughter went back to university with three children and studied architecture. So I got sort of involved in that with helping her mainly through childminding, but I became engrossed in what she was studying and discovered that I do really have a love of buildings and architecture, especially that mid-century modern period of time. I find those buildings are fabulous. And so I started making quilts based on architecture. The other thing about that is that I also started using a black outline around a lot of my features, be it mountains, be it buildings, be it whatever, to make my work a little bit more graphic. So that also came about around about that time. And then C&T were very keen to publish the book based on architecture. So we worked through that process. I've got some quite iconic Australian buildings in there, like the Opera House, the Butterfly House, and also some of the very ordinary buildings. So some of the just little cottages, some boat sheds, things like that. And over that time and still today, I do teach classes based on architecture. Sometimes it's just doorways, sometimes it's whole buildings. So it's interesting that the quilt that I've just finished actually features architecture as being very important, both with a jetty and a big old boat shed on a wharf. So, I'm still looking at architecture, incorporating it into my work.
Yeah, and this is the one that's entered in the latest show in Australia.
Yes, right? Yes. So it's the Australasian Quilt Convention, which is coming up in April. Yeah. So it is our biggest quilt show in Australia. It has a fabulous exhibition of all the best quilts from every state amalgamated together. There'll be some overseas, some international exhibitions. There'll be teachers coming from the US, the UK, Japan, different places. It's sort of like Australia's answer to Houston. It's our version is Australasian Quilt Convention. It's held in Melbourne each year in April. And Melbourne's a great city to visit. We have our trams, our free trams, easy to get around, fabulous architecture. And AQC is held in the Royal Exhibition Buildings, which are very, very old buildings, convention buildings. So even just to go to the buildings is a treat. And to do quilt classes there and to see the exhibitions is just fabulous.
Yeah, and this podcast episode is actually very timely because it airs on April 9th. So the show is this weekend. So you have been featured in magazines and publications for decades, but let's talk about a few shows where you were the keynote speaker or you had a special exhibit. So you've been to Quilt Canada 3 times.
Yes, I have. And the very first time opened so many doors for me. I had an exhibition at Kamloops in 2007. And Diane Jansen, a Canadian quilter / Australian, has a quilt shop nearby. And she invited me to have an exhibition at that Quilt Canada. And it was just amazing. The book had just come out. And so I can remember Diane purchased like maybe 100 books and I purchased 100 books and we both sold out on day one and we could not believe it. And so it's very interesting that since then, coming over to that exhibition has opened so many doors for me in Canada. Another interesting thing is that Diane Jansen has run quilting tours to Australia, where she'll bring over, you know, a busload of quilters. And one year she asked whether she could visit our house. We lived in a Kerrang in the small country town with her busload of people and would I do a trunk show? And I said to her that would be fine if I was home because, you know, I was already committed to teach. Anyway, when I got the date, I was away teaching in New South Wales. So I said that I thought my husband would be able to do the trunk show. So small country town, this big coach pulls in and all these ladies stream into our house. Now, our neighbours knew that I was away. I'd said to Tony that perhaps he could make them morning tea. So he practiced making scones for about a week, and he had all different recipes. So he provided morning tea for the ladies. He did a trunk show with my quilts, and I would love to know what he said, because he wouldn't have known anything really. But then the funny thing was that we were going to England the next week, and I had all kits and hand-dyed fabric all stacked up in the lounge room ready to pack to take over to England.
Yeah.
And one of the ladies saw this stack of fabric and said, "Is this for sale?" And he was so pleased with himself that he sold it all. So these ladies purchased all my preparations for going overseas, and I came home and I had about 2 days to madly dye fabric and get organized again. But so many times when we're in Canada and we'll be in a quilting group, people will say to me, "Is your husband with you? I remember when we came to your house in Kerrang and you weren't there and we all bought fabric." So
that is so funny.
Yeah.
And you've been to Road to California a few times as well. Tell us about that.
Yes, I love going to Road to California. I think I've judged there 3 times. So I was there 12 months ago and I've exhibited my quilts there. The other place that I've had exhibitions overseas is at the NEC show in Birmingham in the UK. And they operate quite differently. So they invite different quilt artists to have their own exhibition. And when I say differently, what happens there is that they will give you beforehand a space. So they say you have like 10 meters by 6 meters. Tell us where you want the walls, and you design the entrance and the exit, and they put up the walls and you design the spaces for your quilts. Then once the quilts are hung, the lighting person comes around and lights up every quilt. So your quilts are on solid black walls, beautifully, expertly lit, and it's an honour to exhibit your work there. So twice I've exhibited there and that's been absolutely fabulous. It's also a wonderful show to visit because they have a lot of working demonstrations where they have artists actually dyeing, printing, making quilts, designing quilts. There's a lot of hands-on things there as well. So yeah. I really love going to that show at Birmingham.
Yeah, and of course, I've taken tours there a few times. I'm not going in 2024, but if you're interested in going, you can come to the Festival of Quilts Birmingham with me in 2025. Okay, I love that show. My favorite part about that show, I think, is that it's not juried. So every quilter who enters that show gets in the show.
And they also have quite a few quilts come over from Europe. And when I taught there, which I've taught there twice, people will fly over for the day. So they'll come from, you know, from Spain or from Holland, and the airport is at the convention center. So they fly in and they'll be there for the day and fly home again. It's truly amazing. It's a wonderful, wonderful show.
You've also been featured on Craftsy. So tell us what you brought to the world through Craftsy.
So I did enjoy the whole Craftsy experience. So I think now it was about 2013, 2014, and I was approached by Craftsy to do a class, and it was right in their very early times of filming. So they asked me whether I could teach the tiling landscape, the work that was in the Radiant Landscape book. And I thought, well, that's easy. I've just made all the samples and, you know, that will be fine. So I agreed to do it. But then, of course, the publisher C&T said, look, that's great, but everybody has to buy a book if you teach that technique. So then that wasn't going to work with Craftsy. So I ended up having a very short timeline of just a few weeks to come up with a new technique that wasn't in any of my books, to make enough samples that I could show some variation. And that's the class that's on Craftsy. I still do teach that today, that, you know, the contoured landscape, the linear landscape, where we're breaking areas up with lots and lots of contours. But the very first time I taught it, was on Craftsy, so which was pretty interesting as it turned out. But the staff doing that were lovely. It was lots of fun actually putting that together. And it was filmed about 3 days where I stayed in Denver. So it was a very different experience for me. And, you know, that is still out there, that Craftsy class. I still have people who purchase that class. It's still relevant today. I still teach it myself. And I still love what people are creating with it.
Yeah, I remember taking that class on Craftsy. I've been a Craftsy member for ages. I think, I don't know if I bought a lifetime membership or if I just keep auto-renewing, but I remember one moment in that class where I thought, oh, of course that's the way you should do it. And you had pulled out this huge, clear plastic something, plexi something, and you had drawn lines all over it. And I thought, well, that is the easiest way to do all that placement, of course. So, you know, so many wonderful tips in that class. So if you're a Craftsy member already, go in and find Gloria's name in there and check out her workshop. It's a really great one. I took it many years ago. Okay, so you have taught extensively in over 20 countries overseas, and we know that you love to teach 4 and 5 day classes nowadays, like Empty Spools in Madeline Island. So if you're interested in those events, just Google Empty Spools and Madeline Island, and I'm sure you'll be able to find them. They happen every year. So when you're teaching like a nice long week-long class, what are your favorite moments that happen throughout the workshops?
I think people generally come to class feeling quite nervous and not sure how they're going to go. It's interesting because about 2 years ago, I actually did an acrylic painting class and I was terrified. So I can identify with how people feel when they come. But I make the beginning sort of fairly structured, especially in the longer classes, in that we all work on a small project to start off with, and then we blossom out from there. And then I get really excited about how people then work on their own design and they sort of experiment but come up with something that's theirs. I always provide a couple of patterns so that if people are not sure, they can start with that, but invariably people then go off on a tangent and make it their own. And it's just giving people that confidence. I really still love the teaching. I must be one of the oldest quilting teachers that are out there now, but I still love that. And I love the expression on their faces. You know, we put the work up at the end, just the confidence that they have then to go on and do their own thing. And it's pretty special to me is to work with people, taking them from something quite structured to then them working through a process that it becomes their own, that it is their design and it's their input. It's just not one of my patterns. So that's really special to me.
Yeah, and I can imagine every student saying, it was so special to me that I got to take a Gloria Loffman class. So can you tell us a little bit about your lectures as well? You do lectures online or in person, so you have a couple of them?
Yes, I've got 4 different lectures that I do on Zoom, and I really had to be not bullied into it, but really encouraged in the beginning when, you know, we're all in lockdown, because our state and Melbourne, our capital city, was one of the most locked down in the whole world, apparently. You know, I had all this lovely studio time, but I did have to cancel all my classes. And I was approached by Kathy Miller, the Canadian singing quilter, to do a Zoom lecture for her guild at Victoria on Vancouver Island. Now, I was petrified. She really encouraged me to have a go and do it. And that was the very first Zoom lecture that I did. And since then, I don't know how many I've done. I can't count how many. And I'm amazed at how you can build up a rapport with people, even in that short time. I usually like to have what I call a technical check a couple of days beforehand. Basically, for me, that's meeting sort of like the key people, and I find that really helpful. But I've got 4 different lectures now that I give on Zoom, and I really enjoy the process. I have 1 shirt that I wear for all of them that is a plain colour, and I always put a quilt up behind me, the same quilt that's sort of fairly neutral, and the same shirt. So I get dressed and my husband knows I've got a Zoom lecture that day. But I really do enjoy doing that. As well as that, also in COVID, we came up with three different classes that we videoed and are on my website. So the three different ones based on my techniques, and you can purchase them on the website. They're all about $30 Australian, roughly, so they're not expensive. And what happens is you download the videos, download the notes, download the patterns, and then they're yours to keep. So that was a bit of fun, actually, filming those, just the two of us at home, me pretending I was talking to a class and my husband's doing hand signals on the other side of the camera. We learned a lot along the way. We do plan on doing another one later this year on dyeing and painting fabric, because I have a lot of requests for teaching dyeing, and I think that would work quite well as a class online.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing I really admire about you is that you offer your teaching to the world at many different levels. You can be on site at a huge event for a week-long course where people have to fly and you know, sign up, or you can also buy a $30 workshop on your website or go to Craftsy if you're already a member and those kind of things. So it's achievable or attainable at all different levels. Okay, so I really want to talk a little bit about the memorable moments. So was there a quilt or quilt project that has been most memorable for you over all these years?
I think the Kimberley quilt, the quilt with the Boab trees, because that won the Best of Australia that year, that was memorable. But also it's the quilt that I'm most well known for, I think, and people still talk to me about that quilt. There's another quilt that I made that's nowhere near as intricate, and it's the canopy quilt, which is a quilt where you are sort of looking up to the canopy of a forest. And that's also a quilt that a lot of people still talk to me about. That quilt has gone to a new home in Sydney, but it is a quilt that stands out, as you know, a lot of people remember it. And I made that a long time ago as well. And then a more recent quilt, I revisited in my mind the Kimberley area of Australia. It's right up the northwest. It's about 7 or 8 days of driving to get there. And we've had a couple of camping holidays there. So about 2 years ago, I made another quilt based on that area. But this time my Boab trees are reflections. They're all reflections. So when people look at the quilt, they want to turn it up the other way. But I like the fact that it gets people thinking about it, and it's just not so obvious. There's something a little bit special about it. So that perhaps is another important quilt for me, is that more recent quilt that I made, which I called Reflecting the Kimberley. Yeah. The only thing out of the water are a few rocks. The rest is all reflection.
Yeah, and I have dove deep into your gallery. And this is the first one in the Outback quilts. It's the latest one, right? Yes. And that was my favorite quilt of all of the quilts you've ever made in your lifetime. Because I looked at it, I thought, oh, this one's upside down. And then I looked a little more closely, and then I got deep into the layers of the water, because there's so many beautiful colors and pieces in there. It looks like that collage technique in the background. But then you look at the top, and you realize instantly it's a reflection, because it's so luminous and the rocks are so real. Like, the rocks really look real, and you can see that it's the water. And of course, you're not going to have upside down trees in the water. It's the reflection. So it really becomes obvious as you look deeper into the quilt. Okay, last question before the break. In your creative practice, what brings you joy?
I think perhaps the most joyful part is before I actually start, which is crazy, really, I guess. It's playing around with the design, because usually I've got a whole lot of elements I want to include. And so for quite some time, I'm experimenting and rearranging those elements in my design. And then the very best part is choosing the color and the fabrics. And I love that part. I love putting the colors together, just even laying them out. And the way I work is, once I've got my design drawn out, I will get out a whole lot of fabric, that I think might work for that quilt, and I'll put it in a big box. So I've always got it there, and I'm not loath to getting out more fabric, but just going through all my drawers of fabric and thinking, yeah, that might work, and just fondling the fabric, getting it all out in big piles of it, that is very, it's so rewarding, and it is joyful. I love that part of the process. And then the nitty-gritty starts. I actually start constructing the quilt. But I think, you know, that anticipation, that excitement before you actually commit, I love that part of the process.
Oh, sweet. Okay. So right now we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk all about Gloria's Raja Award, some of the mentors she's had along the way, her retreat in the desert. We'll get into that a little bit more, and her textile tour to Morocco. So when we come back, we'll get into all those topics and more. The Square One Textile Art Workshop is now available. You can sign up anytime. You'll learn 6 fiber art techniques and create an art quilt start to finish. It's an on-demand course to take on your own time anytime, and you'll have it forever in your student portal. And if you've bought this course before, now's the time to go back and check it out again, because I've changed all of the original replays to brand new videos. You're gonna love it, and you get it forever with your original purchase. At only $37, it's a great deal. So go to quilteronfire.com to sign up for the Square One Textile Art Workshop today. And we are back with Gloria Loffman. And Gloria, can you tell us what is your favorite time of day?
Okay, good question. I think my favorite time of day is the afternoon. In the morning, I'm not very creative, and I usually do my email and computer work and a little bit of housework. But once I've had lunch, I think then I settle into the afternoon and probably produce the most work, and then I don't want to stop. And if I stay in the studio a long time, I'll hear the pots and pans clanging away upstairs. And I think, oh, good, I can stay here a bit longer, and tea, dinner is on its way. I used to work quite late at night, but I tend not to do that these days. So basically, the afternoon is my favorite time in the studio.
Yeah. And you've already told us about your glorious studio and how you originally thought it would be a teaching space, but then you claimed it all for yourself and your grandchildren. But what is the best thing beyond keeping that space for yourself? What's the best thing that you do for your own self-care?
Yeah, that is a very good question. Because we live on the coast, I do walk a lot. We're about 1 kilometre from the sea, so we spend a lot of time walking down at the beach. So that's pretty special to me. I'm also a very keen reader, so I love to read, and I combine my two passions by having Audible books running almost all day while I'm in the studio. Unless I'm writing something, I will have someone reading a story to me while I am stitching away. So I'm a very avid reader and listener of Audible books.
Yeah, me too. Especially when I'm traveling, I love to have an Audible book in my ear. Okay.
Absolutely.
So we've talked about some of those early quilts and the awards that they've won. And we've already mentioned the Kimberley Mystique was the winner of Australia's most prestigious national quilting award in 2003. But you personally won an award in 2009 for outstanding contribution to Australian quilt making. So tell us all about that.
So that was an honour. That was huge for me. In Australia, each year we have the Raja Award, which is, you know, a contribution to Australian quilt making. The Raja was a ship that came out from England in the convict era, and it had a lot of female prisoners on board. They were prisoners because they might have stolen a loaf of bread to feed their families, etc. And so this award is named after that ship, and it's very special in Australia. So I was thrilled to receive that for my contribution to Australian quilt making. So, yes, a very, very special award.
Yeah, and I have a little story to add here about Kathy Miller, since you were talking about her a little bit earlier. I had the pleasure of teaching on a quilt cruise where I invited Kathy Miller to teach with me. And we had 50 quilters with us, and she brought her guitar. I enlisted her to do a trunk show and sing throughout the cruise. And she sang her song about the Raja boat. And so it was delightful to learn that story and learn all about it and now see it, you know, that you've won an award as well.
It is. It's very special. And the different quilt makers in Australia that have won that award over the years, it's been pretty incredible, really. And each year we wait to hear the announcement of who it's going to be this year. But it's very special in Australia.
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about that retreat at Uluru.
So Ayers Rock is in the middle of Australia, and the Aboriginal name is Uluru. And there's a friend of mine called Caroline Sharkey, who every second year arranges a quilting retreat at Uluru. Now, Caroline has a wonderful link with that part of Australia. It's right in the middle of the desert. She has been an artist in residence there probably for about 20 years. She would spend 2 or 3 months there working and selling her work as an artist there. And so she started running quilting retreats there. They're every second year. And the next one is in August next year. And we do have quite a few international visitors come to be at that quilting retreat. There's usually about 5 different instructors, and we have to take everything in. I mean, the only thing there is like a little supermarket and a couple of cafes and some hotels. So we take everything in, and the retreat goes for 4 days. But it includes wonderful things like dining under the stars in the desert at night, or visiting the field of lights, actually going out and walking around the base of Ayers Rock or out to the Olgas, but a fabulous, fabulous place to visit. My husband and I have probably been there about 10 times because we like to take our kids there when they were little, and then we've been back. It's such an incredibly magic place, especially when the sun goes down. But to actually have a quilting retreat there, it is very, very special. Bernina supplies sewing machines, and as part of the retreat, you actually get to take that sewing machine home. So it's, you know, one of the 300 series Beninas, and it's part of you, you know, coming is you get to take home this sewing machine that might have like an Aboriginal painting on the front or some of Caroline Sharkey's work. But I've had the honour of teaching at every one of those retreats, and I can't wait to be going back next year. I design 1 or 2 special projects to teach there, and it's absolutely fabulous. So anybody overseas that's thinking of coming to Australia next year, time it to come in August.
Yeah, August 2025.
Yes.
Oh, that sounds like such a wonderful retreat and exciting news as well. You've done this 2 times already, but coming soon, you have another textile tour to Morocco. So tell us about that.
It's just a fabulous thing. And I feel so lucky that I was invited to do this. So the first one was just over 12 months ago. I really didn't know what to expect, but it's run by a company that specializes in like different areas of the arts tours. So, you know, there's one based on ceramics, or there's another one based on photography. So I was invited to be the artist in residence for the tour based on textiles. And it was the most fantastic opportunity. It's just a small group of about 12 people on a lovely big bus. You have plenty of room. And then there's the couple that run the tour, plus the driver, plus a local guide. And the couple that run the tours, they're artists in their own areas. So it's just fabulous. They've got a fabulous rapport with the local people. We visited lots of local artists, especially women. So some refuges, for women, and plus all the sites in Morocco. But of course, ours was a textile tour, so we saw lots of incredible textiles. And I also toured a project along the way. So we did small wall hangings that involved applique and some Posca pens, and people could use, you know, my pattern or use their own. And mine were based on doorways, lots of fabulous doorways in Morocco. But it was just a photographer's paradise to go over there and to travel around with such a small group. So I'm working on a big project that I've started about 12 months ago, still working on it, incorporating colours and the patterns in Morocco. So it's still in about 1,000 pieces to be put together, but I will get there. So, and there's another tour. I'm doing another tour next year. But they also have a number of different textile artists. They do a number of textile tours. So I know there's some this year and some next year. When we did the first one and they asked us back, I was thrilled. And then when they asked us to go back a third time, I couldn't believe it. So next year in November, we're going back again to do another tour. So fabulous.
Okay, so you have accomplished so much over your wonderful career, and you've already mentioned something that you're creating based on the textile tours, but what's on your design wall? What's something you're dreaming about doing in the future?
Well, I've just finished a big project, but I think I'm still playing with multiple images within one design. And so I think that will be something that I'm going to do next. There's so many challenges out there, but I think that's where I'm heading, is to make another quilt that has multiple images, be it just change of value, be it, you know, multiple pictures put together. But that's what I'm contemplating at the moment as far as my own quilts go. I am cutting back on travel a little bit. My husband just celebrated his 80th birthday last weekend, and, you know, I'm not quite there, but, you know, I'm getting older. We're lucky we're both so fit. So perhaps cutting back a little bit with the travel, spending more time in the studio. It's interesting looking back. When I left school to teach quilt making full time, I was conscious that I needed to earn a living. We had our daughters were living in colleges at university, etc. But now, you know, that's not the important part now. So now I can sort of choose to travel, and I can choose to be home. And after being home in COVID times and having all that studio time, it was so precious and so wonderful that, you know, I am tending to do that, head that direction more, cut back on travel and have more time at home working in the studio.
Yeah. So the dream moving forward, more studio time and more wonderful creations, of course. Yeah. Okay. So now it's time for the lightning round robin. It's a series of rapid fire questions and it's super fun. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is your favorite tool or notion?
Okay. I do have one of those seam rippers that have tweezers as attached to them. So it was developed by Cindy Needham, and it's a combination of tweezers and seam ripper. And I absolutely adore that tool. And when it gets buried under fabric and I can't find it, I'm a bit frustrated. The other thing that I use all the time is my color wheel, and that's the Color Wheel Companion. And even though I sort of figure I know a fair bit about colour now, I still refer back to that Color Wheel Companion. So there are two things that I always have with me when I'm travelling and also in the studio.
Okay. What motivates you to get out of bed in the morning?
Okay. Good question. First of all, my husband makes good coffee, so that's important. So that's first thing. Motivates me to, if I'm in the middle of a project, I can't wait to get back to it. So getting down into the studio and working and playing with fabric, that motivates me to get going in the day. So, yeah, I'm not really such a morning person. That's why that coffee is important. But after that, I'm good to go.
Has there been a mentor who's really influenced you along the way?
Probably Joan Wolfram. from the US. I did a workshop with her in about 96 or 95 when she came to Australia, and I did 3 or 4 days with her. I've since spent time with her where she lives just out of Seattle, and she's become a friend, but she was such a powerful influence to do with colour, to make me experiment with colour. So she would be the main one. I actually haven't been to a quilting class since then. So, and that was a deliberate thing on my part. Once I started teaching, I decided that I wanted it to be my own work. And so I haven't been to a class since then. About 2 years ago, I did an acrylics painting class weekend. I was a bit nervous that I would like it so much. What was I going to do with all the fabric? But I knew after the first 10 minutes that the fabric, I was happy to work in fabric. I learned heaps, but no, I much prefer to be working in fabric rather than just in paint.
That leads us right into the next question. Do you have another favorite hobby besides quilting?
I love walking, and because we live at the beach and we also ride our bikes, but reading and listening to books, is that's a big part of my life.
Yeah. Do you have any furry friends in your studio?
No, but 3 daughters, between them have 4 big dogs, so 3 Labradors and 1 Golden Retriever. And when we're home, we often have 1, 2, 3, or even 4 of those dogs here. There's a lot of dog hair to vacuum up, but we don't need our own dogs because we travel so much. We had dogs before we started traveling, and we certainly get our sort of fill of having pets because those dogs visit quite regularly.
Yeah. So looking back over at one of your most proud accomplishments that you mentioned, how did that roll out, the award for contribution to quilt making? Did they call you one day? Did they bring you to a show to give you an award on stage? How did it come about?
No, you don't have any idea. It's announced at the Australasian Quilt Convention in Melbourne at the dinner, and you don't have any idea that you've been nominated or you've won that award. But it was a bit strange that year because my husband knew, or he knew that there was a chance. They must have talked to him. And he said to me that he thought that our 3 daughters perhaps might like to come to the dinner because I was having a significant birthday, like about the next day or something. And he said, oh, we thought maybe, you know, he'd invite them to that dinner. And so they were there and when that was announced. So that was really, really special. I had no idea. He told me this grand tale of why they were there, and I just believed him. I was busy teaching. And so that was really special that I was able to share it with them and with my husband. He deserved half the award, to be honest.
Well, and I have to tell you, I am so impressed by your husband and the stories you've told about him, especially the fact that he did a trunk show and you weren't even home. He really sounds like a sweetheart.
Yes, he is.
Okay, well, thank you for braving the lightning round, Robin. That was fun. So I've mentioned your website at GloriaLoffman.com, where we can find everything that we talked about today. But where's the best place for quilters to connect with you on social media?
Well, you know, social media for me is not my strength. I actually wasn't even on any social media until COVID times. And then I had to get one of our granddaughters to get me sorted with that. And so I am on Facebook and I am on Instagram now. It's just to do with quilt making. And I try and, you know, put on things that are coming up, or, you know, classes coming up, or recent work, whatever. And so I have embraced that to a limited extent. So, but other than that, you know, people just write to me for, you know, using the address on my website for contacting me. That's all good as well.
Yeah. Okay. So now as we wrap up, Gloria, what do you want people to take away most from our conversation today?
Wow. That's a good point, isn't it? I guess one thing is that you don't really know what you're capable of. Remember, I was the person that, you know, phys ed teacher, hated sewing, didn't think I was at all creative. And then the incredible journey that I've had through textiles. So that's one thing. It's that, you know, you certainly don't know what's ahead of you or what you are capable of doing. I never would have said that I had sort of, you know, strengths in art, but it has been an incredible journey, and I surprise myself sometimes with what I come up with. So that's sort of been, you know, really quite an amazing experience for me. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm getting out of that is, no matter where you feel like you are in your journey right now, you never know where the path will take you. So just step in and give it a try, right?
That's absolutely for sure. And, you know, I look at our eldest daughter too. She was a chemical engineer, very science orientated, and is now an architect. So different. So, you know, there's all these different opportunities that arise in life, and you don't just have to stay in the same track. There's, you know, you can embrace all of these things and head off in new directions. So, you know, I think that's been quite a lesson for me to see how that can happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Gloria, it has been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you. It's been so lovely. I've been looking forward to this. So lovely talking to you. You make it so easy. Aww. So thank you very, very much. And I hope to hear from some people out there after the podcast.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Okay, so that was my show with Gloria Laufman, a renowned Australian quilter with numerous accolades, exhibits, and awards under her belt. You all know by now that I love to get lost in the galleries and quilts of the guests on this podcast before I even sit down for an interview. And I'm telling you right now, if there is one takeaway from this podcast, it is to visit Gloria's website, check out the inspiration tab for the photos, check out the galleries tab for the quilts, and then check out the workshops tab for the learning. She has learning available at all levels. And of course, if you ever hear that she is teaching within a radius of your home that you can afford to travel, be the first one to sign up for her workshops, because they'll fill up fast. It was an absolute delight to have Gloria on the podcast, and I loved sharing her story with you. Do you own a quilty business? The Quilter on Fire podcast gets over 4,000 listens per episode, and who's going to listen if they're not a quilter? So it's the perfect audience for your quilty biz. If you advertise anywhere, why not consider a podcast ad? Quilter on Fire podcast ads bring great value, and they are not just here and gone. The ad stays up for the life of the episode. Connect with me on the socials at Quilter on Fire, or drop me an email at brandy@quilteronfire.com to get your latest product or service into the ears of thousands of quilters today. Thank you for listening to the Quilter on Fire podcast. Until next time, dream big and have fun in the studio with the Quilter on Fire.